We're in the middle of Daf Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, and we were discussing on the top of this Amud the issue of Mora Hora, Talmud Shemora Hora B'fnei Rabba. That in the presence of your Rebbe, you're not allowed as a student, as a disciple, to offer an answer and a ruling to a halachic question. That would undermine the kavod of your Rebbe. The Gemara gave the exception to the rule in the case of a shechita knife that the shochet is allowed to paskin for himself after he tests out the knife to make sure that it's smooth and it has no nicks in it. And even if the Talmud is the one who's shechting the animal, he can check for himself the knife. He doesn't have to ask his Rebbe. And that's called chazi l'nafshe, which means that he himself, if he's a Torah scholar and he's an absolute baki in the halachas of shechita and sakin shel shechita, he can check the sakin of shechita for himself. He doesn't have to show it to his Rebbe. There is a situation in which if he began with covet of his Rebbe, in other words, in certain situations the Gemara says that he actually should get the okay of his Rebbe. The Gemara, for example, tells us a story about Ravina and another story about Rabbi Lazar, and you know they wanted to ask the Rav, Rav Acha, they wanted to get his approval on the Sakin. And the Gemara quotes Rava that Sumi Rabbanu Chazi Lenafshi, that a scholar is allowed to check out the knife and shecht it for himself. Okay. So we're to Amar Rava, and that is the first of the wide lines, or right before the first of the wide lines. And Rava now has another exception to the rule, a scenario, a case in which you're allowed and even obligated to offer your opinion without asking your Rebbe. And that's called Lafrushe Mi'isura. You see someone who's involved in an action or about to implement an action which is prohibited according to the law. Says Rava, afilu lefanav, even in the presence of his Rebbe, shapir dami, it's fine. He's allowed to tell the person that you're about to violate an iser and make sure that he objects, because if he's shosek, if he's silent, that he starts running around looking for his Rebbe, then in the meantime, the person is going to violate the Torah law. And the Talmud has to tell this person, watch out, you are about to violate the Torah law. That's not considered hora b'fnei rabba. That's not an insolent. That's not an undermining of the respect that the Talmud has to have for his Rebbe, because there's a very urgent situation here, and right now somebody is about to violate an iser. We have to separate him. We have to prevent him from violating this iser. And the Gemara tells a story. Ravina v'yosiv kamei d'Ravashi. Ravina was sitting in the presence of his Rebbe Ravashi. Chazia, and he saw lahu gavra, a certain person, they call osole lechamre. He was taking his chamor, and osar means to tie it up, bitzinta, with a palm, using the palm of a tree. No, it's the tree had a palm, and he was tying his chamar down to the tree with this branch. Is Rami Beikola. Ravina started raising his voice against this person. Why? Because you're not allowed to use a tree and benefit it from on Shabbos. And by tying down his animal to this palm tree, he's using and benefiting from the palm tree. V'lo ashkach be. And the owner of the donkey did not pay any attention. He continued to tie down his donkey. Amalei, so Ravina went a step further. He saw that just using regular methods of trying to talk to him rationally were not working, were not effective. So he jacked it up and he added a decibel. Amalei, Ravina said to that person, Lehevi Aigavra Bishamta. That person should be in a state of Shamta. Shamta is the Aramaic equivalent of Nidui. Now, exactly what Nidui is, that's complicated. It's not exactly the same as Cherem. It's less severe than a Cherem, but nevertheless, it's a pretty severe Issa. So, as long as this fellow was ignorant of the law, he didn't realize that he's not allowed to tie down his chamor to with the branches of this palm tree. Okay, so I wouldn't put him into nidui. He's just ignorant. But now you can't tell me he's ignorant because Ravina has already appraised him of the law, and at this point he's violating the law deliberately, and as a result he deserves to be put into nidui. And that's the law of somebody who flagrantly and deliberately violates the law, pays no attention to the chacham who's telling him that he's not allowed to do what he's doing, and we put him into nidui. Which means that certain business dealings we're not allowed to do with him, we can't come within a certain, it's kind of a punished social distancing. Anyway, Amalei. So Ravina now felt a little guilty about this because his Rebbe Rav Ashi was around. So he turns to his Rebbe and he says, Kihai Gavna. He says, in this case, that I did this in your presence, is Mimis Chaza Ki Afkarusa? Afkarusa means chutzpah. Is this a chutzpah on my part? He began to feel uncomfortable with the fact that maybe he overstepped his bounds as a Talmud. The Rebbe should have taken care of this, not him. And if he did so, then he's like, Moro Rab Ifnei Rab. Amalei, so Rav Ashi said just the opposite. You did exactly what you had to do, quoting a pasuk in Mishlei, Ein Chacham Ein Tfun Ein Eitzel Neged Hashem, that all the wisdom in the world is meaningless in a case of Neged Hashem, in a case of Chil Hashem. If a person is about to violate the Torah, then we have Chil Hashem. This is a desecration of the will of God. And there's no Chachma here. You don't have to give respect to a Chacham when there is an undermining of the Kavod Hashem. And that's called Chil Shem Shamayim. And that's Ein Chachma Vein Eitzah Vein Tvuna L'Neged Hashem. It's interesting, the Gemara. Let's see if he mentions the Gemara here. He doesn't mention the Gemara, but the Gemara in Masechta Brachos quotes this same pasuk to prove that if a person is walking in public and he realizes that his garments are shatnez, he's got to take them off. Aye, there's kavod abrios. We have to give kavod to a human being and his dignity. But ain chachm ain tfuna keneged Hashem. Okay. Now, having presented various scenarios in which a Talmud is permitted to offer his opinion, like the case of the Sakin that we spoke about, now the case of Lafrushe Meisura, now the Gemara wants to weigh two things. Number one, what is the severity of someone, a Talmud, who does violate this prohibition, and he offers a ruling with that insolence, in the presence of his Rebbe. And secondly, the Gemara wants to analyze, what is the presence of your Rebbe? Does it mean, Mamish, he's right there in front of you? Or does it mean he's accessible within a certain radius? So first of all, as far as the severity of this prohibition, Amar Rava says that a Talmud of a Chacham, who gives a Horah while his Rebbe is alive, befunav, if the Rebbe is right there, we'll see what that means in a minute, Asr. He's not allowed to do so. And if he does so, chayav misa. Now, this doesn't mean that we'll put him to death, but he is guilty of a violation severe enough that up in Shamayim, in the heavenly courts, they may mete out his death. And we're going to see a story about that soon, about a Talmud who unfortunately died as a result of the fact that he was Mora Hora. Shalom b'fana. If it's not in the presence of his Rebbe, Asur. But Eino Chayev Misa. Now, it seems like there are three different laws over here, and three different proximities. Number one, you have the case where the Rebbe is right there. Obviously, if you jump in front of your Rebbe to offer an answer to a question and give a ruling, that's very insolent, and that's very insulting to the covenant of the Rebbe. Then there's a less severe case where the Rebbe is somewhere, somehow in the vicinity, but it's shalom b'fanav. He's not there right that moment. And then you could have a case where the Rebbe is on the other side of the earth. And in such a case, maybe you'd be allowed to offer a ruling, even though your Rebbe is still alive, but he's on the other side of the earth, which has to do with something called Gimel Parsos. Okay, we'll try to figure out how many miles that is. You know, I'm wondering if by chance today some of these laws would change. You know, maybe with all that technology, it could be that it's always considered Lefanav. I don't know. In any event, the Gemara now tries to analyze Rav and says, Vishalo b'fanav lo? Are you telling me that if the Rebbe is not present at the time that you gave the ruling, then that's a less severe Isur and you're not going to be Chayav Misa? For Tanya, we have a Braisa, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Lo Mesu, B'nei Aaron, Ad Shahoru Alocha B'fnei Moshe Rabban. Now, there are many different possibilities and views as to why Nadav Avihu died with the fire that came down from heaven. We're holding now like that view of Rabbi Eliezer, that they died because they were Mora Hora B'fnei Moshe Rabban. When the Torah says they brought a foreign fire, what it means is it was foreign in the sense that they had no right to give a ruling on an issue, on a halachic legal issue, in the presence of Moshe. Now we're going to soon see that Moshe Rabbeinu was not really there physically, and yet they died. Nadav Avihu were punished with death, heavenly death, even though it was shalom b'fanav. And my darush, what's the source for the fact that the sin of Nadav Avihu was the sin of Mora Hora b'fnei Moshe Rabban? How do you know such a thing? And the Gemara answers, we derive it from a pasuk at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. It says, V'nasnu b'nei Aaron ha-kohen eish al ha-mizbeach. What does it mean when it says that the B'nai Aaron, Nadav Avihu, put the fire on the altar? Amru, Nadav Avihu made a declaration. Af al pi, shah eish yoredes min ha-shamayim, mitzvah lavio min ha-hejot. The pasuk testifies that Nadav Avihu put the flame on the altar to burn the karbanos. But we know that at the time of the Mishkan, there was a great miracle, also the time of the first bais, and the fire would come down from the heavens. So what is the pasuk testifying here that Nadav Avihu lit the fire? There was no need for them to light the fire. It was an exercise in futility because the fire came down from the heavens. The answer is that even though the fire comes out down from the heavens, the halacha requires that the Kohen lights the fire. As if to say he has to do the action, which to the naked eye looks like it's the actual cause of the result of the action, but it's not. It's coming from Shammai. Now, Nadav Avihu were contemporaries of Moshe. They were disciples of Moshe. And if they wanted to come up with this Hora's din, this ruling that despite the fire from heaven, the Kohen is still required to light the fire, then they should have deferred that decision to Moshe Rabbeinu. And instead they declare that even though the fire is coming down from the heavens, we have a mitzvah, we're obligated to bring it, minahejot, meaning the human being has to light the fire. And therefore they brought a fire which is an Esh Zara. Why is it called an Esh Zara? It's because they had no right to light that fire without first getting the ruling, the mandate from Moshe Rabbeinu, because he's the ultimate decisor of the law. He's your Rebbe. Well, because they took a halachic stand and they made this ruling in the presence of their Rebbe, therefore, they died for this. Because of Enosnu b'nei Aaron HaKohen Esh HaMizbeach, that mitzvah l'avio min ha-hejot. Now, we have to bring a fire min ha-hejot. Did Nadav Avihu know this? Apparently they knew this. How did they know this? They must have heard it from Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, the Pasuk says that they brought the Esh on the Mizbeach and they declared that Mitzvah Min HaHejot. Now, if that's what the Halacha requires, namely Mitzvah Min HaHejot, then what they did by lighting the fire was halachically correct, but what was insolent or very much a violation was the fact that they did this without actually getting a horah from Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm thinking out loud, if they had learned this from Moshe Rabbeinu, and the halacha is as they said it is, that mitzvah l'avio min ha-hejot, so why is this any different than the case that we had before of Ravina and Rav Ashi of Lafrushe Misura? Let's assume that the Kohanim didn't realize that they have to light the fire. They were passive. They thought the fire is going to come down from heaven. Then in that case, they, the Kohanim, would be violating their responsibility, their mitzvah, of bringing a fire min ha-hejot. And in that case, Nadav Avihu were perfectly justified in proclaiming that this is the halacha. So in the footnote here, he quotes Tosus Rabbeinu Peretz. He says, Af Shachin Nemar Sheyesh Lahavi Min HaHejot Adayin Ein Ze Omur Ela B'Shar Yomim. So let's just figure out what's going on here. According to Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, there were 7 days of preparation before the Mishkan was erected, and those 7 days culminated on the 8th day, which was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, of the Yom HaKamas HaMishkan. Now, although it's true that the Kohen is commanded to light the fire on the Mizbeach, but that didn't apply during these days, which are called Yemei HaMiluim. In the case of Yemei HaMiluim, the fire came down from the heavens. And despite that, Nadav Avihu insisted and instructed the Kohanim that they have to light the fire. That was not part of the original Horah that Moshe Rabbeinu transmitted to Nadav Avihu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that with regard to Korbanos in general, we'll call it universal Korbanos, the Kohen is commanded to light the fire. But in the case of Yemei HaMiluim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bringing down the fire on a daily basis, Minayin Me'echetesi, how do you know that this same ruling of Moshe Rabbeinu would apply in this case? And therefore you are Mora HaRab Bifnei Rabo. You took the mantle on to offer a verdict, issue a ruling, in an issue which only Moshe Rabbeinu could have paskened. He would be the only authority as your Rebbe to teach you that we should extend and apply the principle of Min HaHejot even during the Shivas Yemei HaMiluim. That's the Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz. And the Ritva has a different approach, that there are two Mizbechos. There's the Mizbeach HaChitzon and the Mizbeach HaPnimi. On the Mizbeach HaPnimi, they did the Haktorah, and that was incorrect. The Halacha of Min HaHejot that Nadav Avihu received from Moshe Rabbeinu was only with regard to the Mizbeach HaChitzoni, the outer Mizbeach, which was in the Azor. What Nadav Avihu paskined over here, without asking their Rebbe, is that even as far as the Mizbeach HaPnimi is concerned, we the Kohanim are obligated to light the fire. Vito, and they actually were mistaken in their Psak Halacha, the Ein Ledamos Mizbeach HaPnimi LeMizbeach HaChitzon. Now, although they made a mistake by lighting the fire on the Mizbeach HaPnimi, and that was an Eish Zorah, that was a foreign fire, because there was no need for them to do so, but that wouldn't have been punishable. Okay, they made a mistake. They thought that for sure the halacha that applies to the Mizbeach HaChitzon of Min HaHejot should be applicable even in Mizbeach HaPnimi. Okay, they're entitled to make a mistake. Says the Ritva, Nenshual HaRa'asam V'lo Al Ta'usam. Beautiful language of the Ritva. Their punishment was not for the toes that made the mistake, but for the Hora, that they took it upon themselves to use their own halachic thinking caps and logically extend the halacha from Mizbeach HaChitzon and apply it to Mizbeach HaPnimi. That they had no right to do. The fact that they were mistaken in their calculation, that doesn't bother me so much. You know, people make mistakes. But the fact that they, chutzpahdik, took upon themselves to issue this psako and didn't ask Moshe Rabbeinu, that's already mora ra bifnei ra. Now the Gemara goes on and tells us another story. The Talmud Chacham Echad Hayelo LeRebbe. This is a very sad story about a student of Rabbi Eliezer, Shahora Halacha Befanov. And in a very insolent way, apparently he paskined Halacha. Now it says here Befanov, but we'll soon see that the Gemara is telling us that Befanov shouldn't be taken literally. Befanov means within a certain radius of what's called Gimel Parsos. Omar Rabbi Lozor Le'ima Sholom Ishto. So he turns to his wife, and she was from tremendous royalty. Anyway, she was actually the sister of Rabbi Gamliel, the chief rabbi. And he says to her, and this was not a curse, he was just like predicting, T'miyani, I'll be very shocked, I'll be very surprised, Im Yotzi Ze Eshnoso, if he'll live through the year, the next 365 days. Velo Hotzi Shnoso, Nebuch this Talmud died. Amrlo, she turns to her husband, Rabbi Lezer, and she says, Noviato, I knew I was married to a holy man, but I didn't know you were a prophet. Amolelo Novi Anochi Velo Ben Novi Anochi. I'm neither a Novi nor a son of a Novi. And the phrase Ben Novi, which means literally should be translated as a student of a Navi, because throughout Tanakh we talk about the children of the Nevi'im are the students, the disciples of the Nevi'im. Elakach mekublani, this is what I received in the tradition from my Rebbeim, kol amora olach alocha b'fnei rabo chayev misa. And again, when it says chayev misa, it doesn't mean that it's a capital crime, we'll put him to death, but it means that he won't live a long life, meaning he'll die prematurely. The Omar Rabba Barachana Rabbi Yochanan Oso Talmud, that particular student of Rabbi Eliezer, who was Moro Rab Ifnei Rabbo, and he died, was Yehuda ben Gurya Shmo. His name was Yehuda ben Gurya. Vaya Rachok Mimenu Sholosh Parsos. He was within a radius up to, but not beyond, Sholosh Parsos. Now, a parsa is the equivalent of 4 mil, and a mil is Alpayim Amma. So, therefore, Sholosh Parsos is 12 mil. Alright, so let's say a mil would take you, for argument's sake, 18 minutes, let's say. So 12 mil would probably, let's say, would be something like 2.5 hours of a walk. Anyway, it's quite a large distance. And that's the vicinity, that's how the Talmud Chacham spreads his wings over that area. And if the Talmud is within that area, then he must not rule on any halachic question without referring it to his Rebbe. And the Gemara again proves from these two cases, that of Nodav Aviu and that of the Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer, that we see that Moro Rab Bifnei Rabo doesn't mean literally Bifnei Rabo. And this contradicts the statement of Rava. Rava says, Shalom b'fanav, he's not Chayev Misa. Now, both Nadav Aviu in that case and the Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer in that case died as a result of this Avera of Moro Ra, and it wasn't Bifnei Rabba. So we still have a big kasha on Rava. So the Gemara answers, b'fanav hava, that Rava is going to interpret that this Talmud who died was Moro Ra literally b'fanov in the presence of Rabbi Eliezer, and that's why he was Chayev Misa. Now, how is that possible? When Rabbi Yochanan made a comment that he was 3 parsos away from Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara asks that kasha now. For ha rochok mimenu sholosh parsos ka'amar. That Rabbi Yochanan made a statement about that Talmud that he wasn't literally, in reality, in front of Rabbi Eliezer's Rebbe, but rather he was in an area within that, you know, that precinct, that territory of his Rebbe of Sholosh Parsos. So this is a very interesting Gemara that we're about to learn. That sometimes what the Gemara does is they add certain specific details about a story in order to, for like, there's an agenda here, so to speak. The agenda is that if you hear a story, sometimes you think the story is just made up in order to convey a message. And now the Gemara is going to try to prove that the reason why Rabbi Yochanan adds these nuances is because his agenda is to prove to you and convince you that this story actually took place. This is not some sort of hyperbole, some sort of fascination or fantasy in order to convey a message and impress you or inspire you. Why? He says, L'tameich, according to your logic, the Makshan, that Rabbi Yochanan meant to teach us that the Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer was chay of Misa, even though it wasn't befun of Mamish, but it was within a certain vicinity, is then Shmo v'shem Aviv Lama. Why did Rabbi Yochanan have to reveal to us the name of this student and the name of his father? Do we have to know all these details? Ella, but rather, the reason why he wanted to reveal all these details is Shalotomar Mashal Haya. That you shouldn't think that this whole story that Rabbi Eliezer was telling was just a simile. It was symbolic rather than real. By filling in the details, and I'm telling you exactly where it happened, or what his name was, I'm even going to tell you what his father's name was, what his Tudat Zehut number is, that indicates that this is a true story that actually took place. Shalo Tomar Mashalhu. But on the other hand, you could always argue that although, you know, Rabbi Yochanan said that there was a certain proximity, but you know, we shouldn't derive the conclusion that Rabbi Yochanan meant to say that he, the Talmud, was three parsos away. Now, let's go back for a moment to the language of Rabbi Yochanan. It's very important to read the language of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, Oso Talmud, Yehuda ben Guria Shmo, V'haya Rachok Mimenu Sholosh Parsos. What does that mean? Haya Rachok Mimenu Sholosh Parsos. It could be, and that's what the Gemara certainly understood in the question, that at the time, at the very moment that this Talmud issued his ruling, he was within a vicinity, a proximity of three parsos of Rabbi Eliezer's Rebbe. Nay, the Gemara is now backtracking. The Gemara is telling us that what Rabbi Yochanan is doing is he's identifying the Talmud. Who was this Talmud? Number one, his name was Yehuda. Number two, his father's name was Guria. And number three, he lived three parsos away from his Rebbe, Rabbi Eliezer. So if you want to find his location and you need a zip code, he was within three parsos of his Rebbe. But at the time that he delivered his ruling, his Orah, it was befanav. It was actually in the presence of Rabbi Eliezer. And that's a chutzpah neira, which according to Rava, generates the chi of Misa b'dei Shamayim, and that's why God took his life. So at the end of the day, we can reconcile this story with Rava if we reinterpret in a new light what Rabbi Yochanan meant by saying Shalosh Parsos. His Shalosh Parsos was a way of identifying this person. You want to know who died at that terrible episode, at that incident where God punished someone and took his life because he was more Rav than Rabbo? I'll tell you where to look it up in the Yellow Pages. So you look it up under Yehuda, under Ben Guria, and you'll find his address in the Yellow Pages as three parsels away from Rabbi Eliezer. Om Rab Chivar Abom Rab Yochanan Kol Amor Alocha Bifnei Rabo Roi La Kisho Nochosh. The way that God will take his life is through the insolence of a snake. Who is the Nachash? The Nachash was the Shliach Min HaShamayim. He was the embodiment of the Satan, etc. And he, the Nachash, used his mouth in the wrong way in order to entice Chava, etc. And he was going to be punished for that terrible aver. So it makes sense that if the Talmud misused his power of speech by issuing a verdict in front of his Rebbe, that he would be bitten by a snake. Now I have here a footnote in the English, and he says the following. Just 1 second. He says that anyone who renders a legal decision in his teacher's presence deserves to have a snake bite him. Shenemar, and he quotes here a pasuk in Iov. The pasuk says, Vayan Elihu ben Barachel Habuzi Fayomer Tsair Anili Amim Kain Zachalti. I am young in days, therefore I was afraid to offer my opinion. And when it says, I was afraid, he says, Zachalti. And the word, the choice of the word Zachalti, is to allude or to refer to a snake, Uksiv, because elsewhere at the end of Dvarim, the Pasuk says, Im Hamas Zochale Ofar. God will smite the sinful nation with the venom of those that slither through the dirt. So the word zochel is to slither, and it is a reference to a snake. And therefore, in the pasuk in Iov, when it says zochalti, he was hinting that he had spoken earlier in the presence of his elders, and that would make him deserving of being bitten by a snake. I just want to see. Oh, here's another note that I wanted to share with you. He says the literal translation of Befunov, and he's liable for death because he was Mororah Befunov, in front of him, in his presence. He says any location within 3 parsos of a teacher is considered as if he's in the presence of his teacher. And someone rendering a decision in that proximity is liable to a punishment of death. So within 3 parsos of the teacher, a disciple will be liable to punishment of death. Oh, now he says the following. 3 parsos further from the teacher, he is still prohibited to render rulings, but he's not subject to the death penalty. So what I said to you before, that if his Rebbe is on the other side of the globe, then it might not apply, that's not necessarily so. It may be not the same severe Issa that's punishable by death, but it would seem that it still is prohibited. However, he quotes the Rashba, that a regular disciple is liable to punish the death only if he is in his teacher's presence. If he's within 3 parsos of his teacher, he's prohibited to render any decisions, but he's not liable to death. And furthermore, there's another decree against rendering decisions even at a distance, unless he has received permission from one of his teachers to do so. Alright, I don't know, he gives us some clue, you know, some general sketches, but I wouldn't say that we have all the details for that. We probably have to learn more of Shulchan Aruch and see exactly how this is. Ziri Omar, he says in the name of Rab Chanina that a person who's Mora Ora Vefnei Halach Vefnei Rama Nikra Chote, he becomes like a paradigm of a sinner. Shenemar Apostolic Tillim, Bilti Tzafanti Imrasecha Laman lo echta loch. Okay, let's see if we can translate this. He says, in my heart I have hidden your word so that I should not sin to you. So I guess he's saying hidden my word means that I didn't render a decision. And why is that? Because I don't want to sin, and I'd be considered a sinner if I rendered the decision because my Rebbe is in the vicinity. By the way, if I tell you that this chapter in Tehillim is chapter 119, does that mean anything to you? Anyway, that's the longest chapter in Tanakh. That's why in the schools here they warn you, even in the secular schools, that if you're misbehaving, the teacher might say to you, 119. You know, they know what that means. I don't know, today maybe you can do some shtick, I don't know, print it out or something, but I don't know. But they want it handwritten. To handwrite Kuf Yud Tes would take you a good couple of hours. Anyway. So David HaMelech saw in his heart that Divrei Torah, that with regard to Torah, lo lahoros bohem b'fnei harav, you should not rule about Divrei Torah in the presence of your Rebbe, so that you shouldn't be a sinner. Rav Hamnuna Rami, Rav Hamnuna found the contradiction between two verses. Ksiv, one pasuk says, Bilibi Tsofanti Imrasecha. That was a pasuk we just learned now from Tilm Kuf Yud Tes. And that sounds like David HaMelech was withholding his Torah inside, Bilibi, in his heart, rather than pass it on to the, and transmit it to the public. Uksiv, but another pasuk says, also in Tilim, Bisarti Tzedek Bekahol Rav. Now the word tzedek here is a reference to Divrei Torah, and David seems to indicate here that Bisarti, I passed on, I transmitted the Torah, Bekahal Rav, in front of great public gatherings. You know, where's the hesitation that we were exposed to in the Pasuk in Kuf Yud Tes, Bili Bitzofanti Imrasecha, Lo Kasha, Kan Bizman, Sheira Hayaori, Ira Hayaori, and Kayam, he's alive, a Khan, Bizman She'ein Ira Hayaori Kayam. So who is David HaMelech's Rebbe? Right, his name was Ira Hayaori, Hayairi. Came from Yair. Now, as long as Ira Yairi was alive, then we can describe David as Bilibi Tzofanti Imrasecha. That I held on, I withheld my Torah in the heart. But the other pasuk, which says Bisarti Tzedek Bekahal Rav, I taught Torah in front of the public, that's Bizman after the death of Ira Hayairi. So this also would support what we saw before in the note, that according to Bali HaTosfos, even beyond Sholosh Parsos, as long as your Rebbe is alive, you're not allowed to be Mora Hora. And that's what he indicates before. That's the more complicated business that has to be ironed out clearly, that there may be a difference between Rabbo Mufak and Rabbo She'eno Mufak. Meaning a person can learn from many different rabbis, or a person can learn with one rabbi, and that one rabbi will teach him a methodology. And the laws become all that much more strict in the case of Rabbo Mufak. Mufak means that is his Rebbe, who has given him the tools with which he can study the Torah. And that Rebbe commands a tremendous amount of respect. In the case of Ira Hayaari, he was the Rebbe Muvak of David HaMelech, and David HaMelech had to give him the utmost respect, such that even if he were far away, Ira, and as long as he's still alive, David HaMelech would withhold his teaching of Torah. Om Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, Kol Anosein Matnosav Lekoin Echad, if he designates one coin and he gives that one coin to the exclusion of all the other coin, his gifts, like there are 24 different gifts that you give to the coin, then that's not a good thing. Mevi Ra'av Li'ol. He brings famine into the land. Now this, my friends, has a lot to do with the famous question in Stucca. If I have a sum of money, should I divvy it up into small portions and give it out to many, many different poor people? Or should I give it to one particular poor person? And if I remember correctly, the Chafetz Chaim, who authored a book called Avas HaChesed, if I remember correctly, don't quote me on this, he paskins that it's better to divide up your money. Because every single time you give money, it's a new nesina, a new giving of tzedakah. Now the deeper meaning behind that is spreading the wealth. Some of the poskim will recommend finding a balance. You know, find your favorite charity, an organization that you really want to support. And if you have $2,000 to give to tzedakah, give them $1,000. And the other $1,000, divvy it up in smaller portions amongst many different individuals or institutions or causes. But there should be a sense of divvying it up. We would say, don't put all your eggs in one basket. And the source for this would seem to be our Gemara here of Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda, and the objection to giving all your gifts to one particular Kohen, Shenemar, and Rabbi Abba derives this from a pasuk in Shmuel Beis, Ira Hayari Haya Kohen LeDavid. What does that mean? He was a Kohen for David. The David who Davi Kohen LeKuli Alma Lo Haya Kohen. Man, you can't tell me that he was only a Kohen for David. He was a Kohen for all purposes and for all Jews. Ella, but rather, what does this pasuk mean? Shahaya David Mishagir Lo Matnosav. That David put all his eggs into one basket, and he sent all his matanos to one person, to this era, Uksiv Basrei. And the very next pasuk tells us, well, it's not, maybe it's not the next pasuk, but very close, it says, Vayahira of be made David. So why did the Tanakh put these two psukim, one contiguous to the other? One pasuk which indicates that David delivered all his gifts to one particular Kohen, and the next pasuk that tells us that famine hit the land. And the answer is, the Torah wants to tell you that if you give all your matanos exclusively to one particular Kohen, that's not a good thing, and that's going to bring famine into the land. Rabbi Lezer Omer, getting back to the discussion that we started about a Talmud who gave a ruling in the presence of his Rebbe, is Moridin Oso Migdulasa. Once a Talmud thinks so highly of himself, makes himself into such a giant that he can paskin and he doesn't have to ask his Rebbe, then the exact opposite is going to happen. His punishment will be that he's Yored Migdulasa. Shenemar, and this we're going to derive from a pasuk in Pinchas. It says there, "Vayomer Elazar Hakohen El Anshei Atzava Haboyim L'Melcham." I'm reading the whole pasuk. Zos Chukas HaTorah Shatziva Hashem Es Moshe. And this is the parsha of what we call Giulei Nochrim, that when you take possession of a utensil that was previously owned by a non-Jew, so you have to subject, if you want to use this utensil, if it's a utensil that's generally used for food, then you have to do what's called haga'ola. You have to get rid of the blia, that absorption of the vela that was absorbed in the in the walls of the pot. And who's talking now? It's Elazar HaKohen. He says, Afal Gav Di Omar Lehu. He told the Anshei Tzova, the members of the conquering army, La'achi Abba Tziva Hashem Halachas Elu, to the brother of my father, which is Moshe Rabbeinu, because Elazar was the son of Aaron. So to the brother of my father, my uncle, right? Tziva Hashem Halachas Elu, God commanded these laws. The Osi Lo Tziva, I wasn't commanded in these laws. So he is actually giving respect to Moshe Rabbeinu when he says Tziva Hashem Es Moshe. But that's not enough. Even though he's admitting that he didn't receive this tzivui directly from Hashem, he got it through Moshe. Afilu hachi yanash. Nevertheless, he was punished. And why is that? Tichsiv, it says about Yoshua, v'lifnei Elazar HaKohen ya'amod, v'sha'alo v'mishpat ha'urim lifnei Hashem. That Yoshua is going to need Elazar for Dvar Halacha to ask the question to the Urim V'Tumim. V'lo Ashkechan Ditzrichle. We never found in the Psukim that Yoshua actually had a need to question Elazar. And that's because he was Mora Halachas B'chaye Moshe. Wow. That Elazar HaKohen, by teaching about Giule Kalim, even though he did give a certain deference, a certain respect to Moshe Rabbeinu, but nevertheless, he took upon himself to paskin these halachas about Hechsher Kalim, and he transmitted them to the people of Israel. And this was all during the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, he was punished. Now, how do we know he was punished? That's because the pasuk seems to indicate that Yoshua would, in the future, need Elazar. He was the Kohen Gadol who was in charge of the Urim V'Tumim, and he would be able to get the answer to that question, but we don't find that ever actually happened. And the answer is because he was Mora Halacha B'fnei Moshe, meaning during the lifetime of Moshe, and Horidu Migdulaso, he went down in his greatness. Ad sheposkulo sheyeh Yoshua tzorichlo. In other words, that even that halacha, just one second, let me just see how he has it. He says, the pasuk describes the various laws that Elazar taught the soldiers. He erred in doing so because Moshe was still available to teach these laws. And even though Elazar told them, God transmitted these laws to the brother of my father, and he did not transmit them to me, nevertheless he was punished for transmitting these rulings during the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu. And it is written, okay, this is, I guess, a pasuk in Yoshua. Pasuk in Pinchas. It says that Yoshua shall stand in front of Elazar the Kohen to inquire of him, and yet we do not find that Yoshua ever needed Elazar, since Elazar had violated but ruled in the presence of his teacher Moshe, he was never accorded the honor of being inquired. Okay, so we're up to Omar Rabbi Levi. Let's just make a note of it if we can. All right, I'm not exactly finding the pencil, but anyway, we're up to Omar Rabbi Levi, which is literally the bottom of Samach Gimel Amid Aleph. Okay, then. So let me take this opportunity to wish you a great Shabbos.